Hello, everybody, and welcome to Whispers Radio on AM 1600 WKKX, the Valley's Watchdog, and UPRN, the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. It is 6:08, 85 degrees here in downtown Wheeling. I'm Jordan Klein. He's Nick Queen, fighting with his headphones. She is the lovely Lola Miller, trying to keep us on the air. Nikki, you want to introduce our guest?
Well, Nigel Kerner is the author of two books, Gray Aliens and The Harvesting of Souls, and The Song of the Grays. A new book exposes the agenda behind the biorobotic gray aliens' genetic manipulation of certain human races. Nigel, are you with us?
Hi there, this is Nigel from England. Greetings to all of you in America and around the world.
Hi, Nigel.
Hi there, mate. How are you?
I'm wonderful.
And thank you very much.
What's the weather like? What's the weather like there?
Hot.
Absolutely gorgeous. It's about 88 degrees under blue, sunny skies. And the sun is just now starting to go down because it's about almost 6:30 here. So absolutely gorgeous. What's your weather like?
Well, it's very difficult to notice because it's rather dark outside.
Oh, that's right. It's nighttime. I'm sorry.
But we don't have any rain.
Well, that's no good. Rain. That's good.
That's always a plus.
Now, where exactly are you calling us from in England?
Yeah. Well, I'd like to greet someone over there. Who am I speaking to? Jordan? Lola?
That was Nick just asked.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, Nick. This is Nigel here. I've got with me a couple of guys, too. One's a associate professor of cell biology at Tennessee University, one of your local universities there.
Uh-huh.
And we've got Dr. Andrew Silverman, a very long-standing friend of mine who is a medical doctor. And I hope he's got some interesting things to say for you guys.
Hi, guys.
Hi, John and Andrew. How are you guys doing?
Hi, great to be here.
Hi, nice to see you.
Okay, so now which one, let me make sure I try to get all the voices correct. Which one is Dr. Silverman?
That's me. I'm Andrew. Hi.
Hello. And the other, John Biggerstaff?
Hi, that's me.
Okay. All right, I can keep those straight, I think. But if not, I apologize. Now, to get started, you know, Nigel, you know, I was looking through, you know, the books, the reviews, what people have written about them. You know, you're looking at Grays as, and correct me if I'm wrong, you know, as almost a kind of a star seed to the Earth. Is that correct?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite get that.
That they kind of like brought our, you know, started humans on the Earth, the Grays. Would that be correct?
Well, I think they're a strange phenomenon, something that I don't think that our local earthly population has ever encountered. I think they're a kind of roboid, a kind of half biological mechanical entity that has no situational living aegis, so to speak.
Okay.
You know, they don't live like we do in the sense that, that biological life lives, if you see what I'm trying to say.
Sure. Now,
it's a universal paradigm that I'm sure is common all over the universe.
And would you say that, you know, another race or, you know, a group of aliens created them to kind of, you know, go out on their behalf to other worlds?
Yeah, you see, don't you think that we're doing that now? We seem to be
sure.
Doing that now with
oh,
robots.
Oh, yeah, I know exactly what you mean, yeah.
Yeah, and so perhaps, and you know, our technology is just, what, maybe 200 years old when it comes to serious technology.
Mm-hmm.
These guys might be there many thousands of years, and who knows what can develop in a concatenate line going forward. And so it's a fascinating and to me a very, very challenging topic. To actually try and get to the bottom of what these grays might actually be. And we're just investigating it. And there are certain ideas that run through one's head when one considers all the evidence that seems to present itself from time to time, you know, of their presence here on our planet.
Well, and then,
of which I'm thoroughly convinced, you know, they do actually, there's no argument in my mind, at least, that they are present here we have to try and find out and understand what on earth this means for all of us, every single one of us on the planet in human fellowship, if perhaps we are to survive.
Now, Nigel, this is Jordan. I got a kind of a question. Your outlook on what the Grays are, you know, it's so different than what most people say. Like, really, where did you come up with it? Like, or sorry, I don't want to say where did you come up with it, but how did you get to this, I guess,
understanding?
Well, I've done a lot of research, you know, on this particular subject. And before I went public with it, I had to make sure that, you know, obviously the thing kind of hitched up and there were no anomalies in it that could be could lead one astray and so forth. I'm perfectly convinced that from the vast amount of evidence, and anyone who actually has looked into the subject, I'm sure will be convinced. Uh-huh. That something really strange is going on here. And of course, it's related to what is commonly known as the UFO phenomenon. And, you know, it's not something that I've kind of lightly speculated on. It's something that we've thought about a great deal and looked at from every angle we possibly can to come and arrive at some coherent thesis as to what this phenomenon might actually be, and what we in our own terms, our own life living terms as human beings might actually, you know, come to know them in their own kind of ways of existence and so on.
Now, the gentleman you have with you, and I would think that probably John Biggerstaff, who's an associate professor of biochemistry. Now, does he lend into kind of your ideas on this being a biomechanical
entity?
Yeah, I was trying to think of the best word. I didn't want to say race, but how does he, you know, how does that tie into, you know, in biochemistry?
Well, in biochemical terms, I mean, what's happening in science at the moment is that we are. We're moving headlong to replace our organs and senses with machinery all the time. So in many ways, we're tracking our biochemistry to become more like what these aliens may have already become, so that we may, in fact, be making our own sort of alien race in the future by imbuing intelligence, or what we call intelligence, to machinery.
Yeah, and okay, and so I'm trying to put my head around it, because, you know, and a lot of times I'm a big science fiction person, you know, and I've read stories before where, you know, races would create, you know, living entities with, you know, almost engineering them to some extent, and then almost transferring their
personality,
soul, whatever you'd want to call it, into, you know, into that device or entity or whatever you want to call it, to continue their life. Is that different than what's happening here?
I think that's absolutely very different. I think what Nigel addresses in his book as the definition of what a soul or consciousness is,
uh-huh.
is a very special thing that we have, which these artificial intelligences don't.
Okay.
And as Nigel continues to talk about this, we'll see much more about that.
All right, well, now, Nigel, what exactly, you know, would you call a soul? I mean, I know the first, your newest book is called Gray Aliens and the Harvesting of Souls, you know, and which is kind of, you know, if you sit back and think about just a title, actually it's kind of scary.
Well, more than that, Nick, like, okay, most people see, like, the Grays, like, I've heard a lot, like, not only is it, like, about, like, sexual stuff, but most of it's, like, a positive effect, you know? It's a good outlook to be abducted by the Grays. You know, they're helping you in some kind.
And there's
if they're harvesting your soul, that doesn't seem to be very helpful.
Yeah, well, the point is, you know, we've got to look at this as neutrally as possible. We can't assume that anything strange is evil and wicked and whatever. But we have some very powerful suggestive factors that might give us a more accurate answer on this. Who am I talking to, Nick or Jordan? Can I say?
This is Jordan.
Hi, Jordan. Well, the point is.
Albie.
The point is, these things that are, and it, as I say, it's to do with the UFO phenomenon, and that phenomenon has shown up over the years to be something that is very covert and doesn't want to be known, want to be found out or whatever. Now, this is an underlying theme of that entire phenomenon. There's a very, very strong behest to remain hidden and covert. Now, if there is such a thing as some kind of alien entity, be a roboid or not. We think it's a roboid because of the inertial gravitational factors that would have to be contended with if you travel past the speed of light as they seem to be doing, even breaking down that barrier. Now, can you imagine coming into a planet, for instance, Jordan, at that stupendous speed, past the speed of light? You have to decelerate. And if you to decelerate with that kind of order of magnitude, if we tried it with our bodies, we would be a stain on the window of the spaceship, you know. But these guys seem to manage this, and they do this because I believe they are made out of a, from all the research I've been through, and the Russians have done some work on this and so on, and it seems that they're kind of mercury mesh with gold wires intertwined. There's a very strange mechanistic kind of being, which has the magnitudes of intelligence, as John was trying to say. And these beings are made for space travel, basically. And of course, that would fit in with the kinds of things we do by sending probes out, you know, which are mechanical things and so forth. But theirs is of a very, very high order of sophistication. And of course, they've come here and they don't want their presence announced. And we want to know why they're covert, what might be the reason for that covert stance they're taking. Because if there was something beneficent and something good, you would expect them to show themselves and say, now, look, guys, we're here, your technology is primitive, but we've got some wonderful stuff we're going to show you, tricks of the trade and so forth, to bring your planet up to the highest orders of intelligent magnitude and so on. They don't do that.
Yeah.
These things are always hidden. They always have some kind of behest which is around the corner, so to speak. And that's a rather suspicious stance. Now, looking at that, it seems to me that we ought to ask questions about why this is so. And I do suspect that they have a hidden agenda. And this is why they really don't come up clean. And can I bring Dr. Silverman in? He's got some ideas on this.
Yeah, sure.
Well, hello, Dr. Silverman.
Hi. Sorry, who am I talking to?
This is Nick.
Nick.
We're all in here. You're talking
to all of us.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, when people sort of think about the interaction between humans and aliens, they wonder, you know, why don't they just appear in front of the White House or grand scales like that and declare themselves? Because people assume that they're going to see us as equals. It seems to me that from looking at what's been happening in lots of people's research, and particularly looking at Nigel's work, it's far more like a comparison would be how scientists study an ant colony, or how the naturalists study creatures by putting little implants on them, you know, ringing the birds and seeing where they go. And they're just studying us from afar. They've got no need to actually declare themselves to us, because we're just part of their experiment, if that's the case.
So we're really just like guinea pigs for them, you know, like a frog.
Yeah, the problem here, you see, is what every superior stance has always dominated the inferior stance to the detriment of the inferior stance. I mean, when I have to say that the Native Americans didn't do too well when Columbus first landed as a result of that landing. So if you see what I'm trying to say. So
sure.
This is a very, very strong point I have to make, that anything that dominates usually dominates the detriment of that which it dominates.
Well, and we spoke to people before that have said, well, you know, they're here to observe us. They're here to, you know, and it almost as a neutral, you know, and it's not neutral when you abduct. It's not neutral when you experiment. You know, there's something going on, you know.
You said it.
Yeah, and
absolutely.
They're not just being passive in their stance.
Yeah. So we have cause to be concerned, is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
And with
that
caution, and looking at it from the point of view of this covert stance they take, I came to certain conclusions about it. And no one can obviously be right, Nick. But I mean, I'm trying to put the kind of slight on this I can. And whichever way I look at it, I've come to the conclusion there's no doubt that something is wrong in the state of Denmark, so to speak. Here. and if you pardon that expression, but
no, I like that. You're from England. That's cool.
The abductee, there's this phenomenon they call abduction, and I don't know whether you are familiar with it, but this is where people who claim to have been taken up into these vehicles or whatever, the ships that these things come in, abductees have commented on the blank kind of emotional faces of the greys as they carry out painful procedures on their human subjects, many of which are centered on the reproductive system. The impression is that we are a kind of, as you said, a laboratory rat to them.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, that's pretty worrying, really. And I think that somehow the truth of all of this ought to be revealed, and whoever's keeping this all hidden, they really are the real villains, I think, of the piece. And we've got to try and seek out these rascals and show them for what they are, because all of us in humanity might be in this particular paradigm theirs, you know, this particular behest that these things might be on. And, you know, I just quite simply, as a dad, as a father, fear for my children. And you know, I think that's a legitimate fear, don't you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, here's my first question. Then, you know, let's say we, you know, accept that you know, what you're saying is correct. And, you know, and there are certain, I guess, you know, standards. Whenever you talk about this, that, you know, people always bring up, and you already talked about one of them, is that they do kind of have this almost detached, you know, even when they speak to, you know, the abduction, those that they abduct, you know, they're very much, they present no emotion one way or the other. They're very
indifferent.
Indifferent to what's happening. You know, don't be worried. You know, everything will be okay. But even then, you know, it's not like, you know, caring. It's more, I guess, programmed, you know, if we're going to go with what you're saying. But they also seem to, you know, abduct certain, it's not like they're going after random people. There seems to almost have a pattern. You know, they're going after, you know, we've spoken to several people, Manuel Navarrete, you know, being one of them, where, you know, he's been abducted. I think he said his father's been abducted. Now his son's being abducted.
If, as Nigel says, these are biological roboids, then we shouldn't really be surprised that they don't display emotion, because they're actually not capable of feeling. Yeah. Feeling stands testament to something that goes beyond the physical, and I think this is something that is going to be spoken about later.
Okay.
That it's actually something that attests to the existence of a complete other type of universe that isn't made up of dead big stars and galaxies.
Yeah. Mm. You see, if I may just say, just cut in there a moment, the fact that they take selected types of people, or certain types of people, or certain lines and families and so on, I've got a different take on that. I don't think these people ought to be too concerned, although I have the greatest and deepest sympathy for them in the terrible experiences that some of them go through. Uh-huh. But I think that these people have something special about them, that these individual, these greys or whatever they're called, these aliens, alien robots might be, I think they're trying to establish biological lines of interception. They're trying to make sure that whatever they might do to us, what their hidden agenda might entail, has to do with reproduction. They may well be trying to amalgamate in some kind of way with our own species. And that is the problem. That is the big thing that I've written about. And that is, and I come to the conclusion that that is really impossible to do, because we are factorized in having something wondrous that is, we came in with the beginning of the universe. We are natural. We come down in a kind of, you know, descent, and we can trace ourselves back right to the very beginning when the whole thing happened.
Uh-huh.
These things may be manufactured machines. And of course, when they see that we can reproduce, and that's of course another consequence of the natural process of coming through, you know, in this line. And that's incidentally what I would identify as a soul. Simply the line of descent that comes from the beginning of the universe, that every single human being can establish to be unique and their own. And that, you see, is what I think is so wonderful about humanity, is we have this facility. And of course, when these robots come across a planet with such a a type of paradigm. Uh-huh. They are fascinated by this, and they're trying, therefore, to see how best, by investigating these lines of descent, which ones would be suitable maybe for something they have in mind. And that's another worrying thing, you know. If this is Nick, I address that to you, okay?
Okay. Well, I'm trying to think of... Go ahead, Jordan. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, you know, you're talking about, you know, what they might have in mind. Do you think that they're... I mean, I doubt it's going to be like world domination, you know. We're really nothing to them. But who do you think is behind what they're doing? I mean, I know Nick, you know, mentioned before, you know, are all the aliens kind of programming these things to go and scout out, I guess? Or, you know, is there a certain... breed, I guess, a species of alien.
Well, is there a certain manufacturer that put these into place? I guess is what he's trying to get at. You know, who's?
Is it the reptilians that are really trying to give it to us, or you know, how is this happening?
Actually, I really don't. And I don't think anyone can actually pinpoint where their particular ancestry hails from in the universe, or whether they're part of some reptilian kind of intelligence that has developed these particular roboids as a investigative tool on their behalf. And it's interesting. I mean, I have some ideas which I put in my book on this, but it would be an extremely long thesis, Nick and Jordan, to actually go into that. But it really, in a sense, is not relevant. The fact is, we've got this particular thing to cope with. And if this is real, as I believe it is, I think the most important thing is that our own human individuals who are in charge of the situation in governments all over the world with the power to hide what these things might be doing. These are the villains of the piece, as far as I'm concerned. They're the ones that we all ought to be concerned about. Why are they hiding this phenomenon where, you know, even astronauts concede that they've actually seen these things? I mean, you know, your own Ed Mitchell is on record as saying that he's seen these things and knows they're here and so on.
Well, do you think it's... Fear.
Can you imagine what a sensational thing this is, Jordan? The fact that there is something here, and here we've got this fraud of SETI looking out there saying we're trying to get a radio signal and all the rest of it. Well, some huge subterfuge seems to be working here, and I hope that doesn't sound paranoid. But if I'm right, we can't be paranoid enough, don't you think?
Well, I know I was because I always pull stories off just in case something happens. You know, if we're not able to get in contact with somebody. And actually, one of the stories I picked today, and it kind of ties into this, is, you know, it's from the Mail Online, which is the Daily Mail over in England. It says, is ET using Twitter? You know, and a scientist talking about how, you know, most likely aliens have been sending us messages, you know, short messages, trying to get in contact with us, and we've just been missing them. And you're saying, no, they're not trying to send us messages, they're here. You know, and you almost get to the point where if they do know that we're here, why are they, you know, not telling us? Do you think it's maybe a fear of how we would react, or do you think it's, you know, if you control the information, you control the situation, kind of thing?
Well, you see, the point is, I see that's what makes it so suspicious. The fact is, if they were beneficent and they wanted to give the world a benediction, don't you think that they could say, come, fellas, here we are, this is what we can do. Now, if they're capable of getting here past the speed of light's remit, if they're able to do these wonderful technological things that are involved in that, surely the ability to communicate with us and get this message that they are harmless would be a very easy thing to do. The fact that they're not doing it, I think, is a component of two things. And that is, somebody here is hiding them, and they themselves have something they don't want us to know about to make the world feel completely insecure. And if that does happen, we have a world constructed on all kinds of systems. Systems might break down, and those systems breaking down might cause chaos. I really, to be honest, don't think that argument holds up. I think we as living beings with this precious entity, mechanism, we have a soul, you know, to us, this is an I believe, an eternal mechanism. And to actually put that at risk and allow maybe machines to play their games with us, no matter what these machines might have promised, I think is a big, big deal. And we really ought, all of us ought to be able to have a say in this, at least, you know.
No, not the ship.
Go ahead. Sorry. It's Andrew here again. You were saying, you know, again, why, if this is the case, why haven't they announced themselves? But as like I say, if a scientist is experimenting with lab rats, does he go and tell them that he's there? If they are trying to make us part of some kind of experiment, some project of theirs for whatever purposes are within their program, there'll be no incentive for them to interfere with that by announcing themselves, because they would inherently consider us to be primitive, inferior creatures that are just part of their observation. They don't need to tell us what they're doing or who they are or that they're here, even.
Well, that leads to, I guess, to a different question then, to kind of understand how, you know, what they're doing. Are they to the point where they're self-aware, as in, you know, they have their own agenda that they've decided to carry out, or if they are, you know, a manufactured entity,
like Terminator,
you know, have they been set up? Yeah, like you know, they're given one mission, and you know, no matter what happens, they will keep on doing that mission until they're told to stop. Therefore, they'll continue to abduct and to carry out these experiments until finally someone says, "End of the mission, come back."
I think they're after something much bigger. I think they're after the facility we have of life and continuity after life. You know, I don't know whether you know too much about the this paradigm of reincarnation, whatever. Some people say there's a continuity to all of us, and in some kind of way we go on in an eternal scale. I think that these things as machines have discovered this particular phenomenon in us. And they really want to understand how they, too, can, in fact, do this. Now, this all might rest on one important thing, and that is the second law of thermodynamics. So now, this law is commonly called entropy, says that all things, all atomic things in time decay, break up, and get into stances of randomness and chaos, and that will then finally terminate our universe. But suppose we as beings have some way of getting past this, and maybe the great teachers that came, whether they're Christian, Jewish, Muslim, whatever, came to tell us that we have a facility to continue past the physical into another dominion of being. Mm-hmm. And if this is true, and these things are mechanical entities that are trying to get, shall we say, their programmed mind into us through mechanical means, maybe that might interrupt this wonderful course that might be open to all humanity. And I want to understand for myself whether we and that paradigm might be at risk from such an entity. That is basically why I've written the books and why I'm looking at this so strongly over the past 30 or so years.
Wow.
And the more I look at it, you know, I tell you, Jordan, Nick, the more I look at it, the more I'm convinced that each one of us has something very, very strongly to object about, with anyone who might be knowing about this in high levels of government or whatever and keeping and hiding this in some kind of conspiracy. Maybe they are controlled, I don't know, by these things. It's possible, that is true. However, don't you think we have to have the chance to take a look at this? And that's really why I've written the books. I want people, ordinary people, to consider the facts. I hope I've presented that as neutrally as possible. And that's basically what this is all about.
All right, well,
Do we get serious about this phenomenon, or do we just discuss this in terms of Star Wars and Terminator and all the rest of it?
Sure. Well, I understand where you're coming from at there. And you said, you know, you mentioned about religious leaders and how they were, you know, helping us to understand the, you know, the way to continue on. And I know you have some theories and some thoughts on the Shroud of Turin and how you feel that it's relevant to humanity. And I think that would be a good tie-in, you know, going into kind of the religious aspect. You know, we've already been talking about souls, but what relevance does that the shroud have to everyone?
All the relevance in the world, if I may say so. And the chapter talk about this is Dr. Andrew Silverman, who has come back from Frascati in Italy, where he attended a seminar with all the big minds researching scientifically into this particular phenomenon. And I'll tell you what, mate, we have here a superb affirmation of how special we all are through what they're discovering about this piece of cloth. And I'll hand you over to Andrew now.
Okay. Hello, Andrew.
Hi. I'm not sure how much you know about the Turin Shroud, but basically it's a cloth that has the imprint of a man on it in perfect photographic negative. It's been around for many, many centuries. Some people may have heard that there was a carbon dating project which seemed to show that it was only about 700 years old, but that's later been shown to have been invalid because they used a bit of the cloth to test that had been sewn in later by the nuns, unfortunately. Now, the fascinating thing about this cloth is that even for those people who think it was made in medieval times, it's not a painting. There's no pigment on there. To make the main body of the image, it's just a surface change in the fibers that holds holographic information, what they call distance coded information, in very high resolution, in very strong anatomical detail that's been studied by pathologists. Looking at it in, as I say, in very fine detail, and they've sort of pieced together, various forensic pathologists have done this, what happened to the man who is depicted on there, he went through terrible agonies, he was killed after having been impaled through his wrists and his hands and whipped many times. Mm-hmm. But the thing that is fascinating about the shroud is that when the scientists who I was with at this conference, when all of them have looked at trying to explain how the image got there, the only explanation that really holds any water is that the image was formed by a short, intense burst of radiant energy that actually the body that the cloth was wrapping actually shone much, much brighter than the sun, just for a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of a second. And that was enough to form the image. Because of the fact that there's information on the image, on the cloth, of showing the distance that it was from the man, it shows that the light wasn't an external source, it actually came from his body. So that this dead body that the cloth wrapped actually momentarily shone brighter than the sun. And one very distinguished researcher there, Dr. Lavoie, did some research that actually shows that when the image was formed, that the body that was within the cloth, he wasn't horizontal lying on the slab. Mm-hmm. He was actually vertical. He was actually suspended in the air. Now that sounds like a bizarre thing to say, but there's so much historical evidence that shows that equates this man to be the same person as we know as the historical Jesus, who we know there are reports of that he walked on water, that he rose in the air and glowed bright in the sun, all these things. Now, let me just say right from the outset that this isn't some kind of sermon. It's not nothing religious about it at all. In fact, I come from this from a Jewish perspective, not a Christian one. Just as, in fact, almost all of his followers did at at the start, interestingly. I don't think he was trying to make a religion. In fact, he, to my mind, he very clearly was against religious institutions, and he was always saying that he was just there to bear witness to the truth, not to start hierarchies and institutions. But the fascinating thing about the cloth for me and the image on it is not so much what he was saying about himself, but what he was saying about humanity, because he was a human being. He was capable of doing, he was trying to, I believe, show us that this is what we are all capable of, that actually the atoms of his body were somehow transformed. Perhaps, why him? Of all the people who have been through our history, why is he the one that left this unique image? And if we look at his life to try and find out what was unique about him, and look at how what he taught and how he lived, it's fascinating if you tie it into one of the paradigms that Nigel talks about in his book, of the fundamental dichotomy between, is everything together all at once, or do we divide? Is everything separate, all apart? And he describes two different ways of being, two different ways of existence. I don't know if you're familiar with this idea of the Big Bang, that the whole physical universe came from nothingness, no thingness, uh-huh. Nothing material.
Mm-hmm.
It was all like a point all together, and that now everything has separated all apart. And if you look at the things that, like he was describing, that the second law of thermodynamics, everything decays. Well, this is something, of course, that Jesus made many references to. For example, the parable about moths corrupting and rust breaking things down. Mm-hmm. And he was saying, he was trying to encourage people, if they wanted to survive, if they wanted to continue eternally, that not to follow that path of degeneration, of breakdown that matter gives you, but to find the other side of existence, which they have through thought, through caring, through bringing together. And he, like all the great teachers, he taught with the statement that he quoted from the Judaic Torah, saying, love thy neighbor as thyself, which is a very fascinating clue to me, that if we all came from one original source, that we are all one. So your neighbor is yourself. And if we actually realize that, if we actually live according to that, then perhaps we can actually make a fundamental change in our atomic state, in our material status, that actually changes matter into light, just as matter originally came from light at the Big Bang, as scientists are aware, that light is actually, if you like, the interface between the two different ways of being, the separate way that you need things to be separate, and we have material bodies to be separate. And if we're able to coalesce through caring, through not making division, not making prejudice, discrimination, tribalism, nationalism, wars, and all of that, if we're able to see beyond that, then we can undo that separation and become limitless, each person becoming limitless and becoming then identical in the same original source. And that's, for me, what the image on the cloth is a... Wow. It's a testament to that actually a human being is capable of undoing that restriction that makes them a separate individual and is able to then transform them into another state.
So are we?
Yeah, well, I'm not a religious chap. I have to come in here if I may, please.
Yeah.
I'm not a religious person, even though I come from a Christian behest, whilst Andrew comes from a Jewish one. Yet it's very interesting how all these things come together in this incredible piece of cloth. And in fact, this is the whole premise that actually jumped at me when I was doing my research into the Greys, that there is an actual connection here. Because you see, if we have this precious facility, as I'm absolutely certain, that, as Andrew has outlined, that we have, then I can say this much. The Greys, you see, can only exist for life. They are adapting us for a kind of existence heading for the only immortality they can know as machines, you see, a physical immortality that, you know, according to the laws of physics, is no immortality at all, because our universe is going to end one day, as cosmologists all over the world now accept.
Yeah.
It has to end one day with the cold death of the entire universe. If we live for a state of being beyond death, shall we say, Jordan, not the state of being in life, we might find the antidote to anything the Greys bring to bear on us. I believe that this piece of cloth is the most powerful illustration paradigm to demonstrate the power over atoms of someone who lives an existence beyond the atomic state. And I think whatever this individual was trying to do, Jesus Christ, he was in a sense proving not for us 2,000 years later, although incidentally it seems to have done that, but proving that we have a component to us that is so mighty and so wonderful that perhaps, as Andrew says, we all have to take each one of ourselves much more seriously than we seem to do when we go about the day's own trouble, so to speak. And I hope that doesn't sound a kind of like a religious gesture.
No, I got
it. Really, it's not intended to be, really.
Here's my question. That light, you know, what was in Jesus that, you know, that caused that to happen? Do you think that the extraterrestrials saw that? And it's kind of a let's see what caused it type of thing. Do you think that's what they're looking for? Because you were talking about
You might be onto something there in the sense that, you know, you remember the temptation exposition in the Bible, in the New Testament, where Christ was supposed to be taken up a mountain and shown all these facilities. One of the things he was shown, we are told, was the cities of the world. Now, you tell me, Jordan, where do you see the cities of the world from one place? You only see it from space. So I think that these guys might have seen something special about this being and took him to a situation where he thought this guy's different, he's exceptional. Now let's find out what he knows and what he is as a human being. And I think that Jesus was returned by these creatures. You can imagine being so superior in technology, they could have squashed him or finished him and whatever, but they did not. They returned him. And I think he was able to tell them, to tell a robot what a robot can never know. Mm. And that is that it is a robot. And he was able to demonstrate to them that they were machines, and as machines they had a value far less than even an insect.
Because the machines,
insect lives. And I think that because they were machines, they didn't take revenge on him. It was information to them, so they returned him and perhaps understood in the context that it was explained that there was a problem for them here as machines, if you see what I mean. And so therefore they themselves took that on board, and interestingly, who knows, they may still be investigating the extent to which this particular statement of Christ made an impact in their psychology, such as their psychologies can be. So it's a very interesting thing that here was an individual with a special power, shall we say, that had a special point to make to us, or also making the same point to some artifacts from a planet maybe many, many millions of light years away that were on this planet of ours for their own purpose. And that's a very interesting thing.
Now, let me ask you. Let me ask you something we should think about. Now, along with this, you know, your views are so different. What do you say, I guess, in the last couple minutes we have, what's your defense, you know, that we're, you know, other ufologists are kind of just saying, you know, you're crazy. You know,
well,
what do you say to that?
I like that kind of craziness because I think it gives you scope for a great deal of discussion. And if you say someone dismiss someone as crazy, well, that is, I suppose, wisdom is in the moat of the eye of the beholder.
Uh-huh.
I like to be that crazy, shall we say?
Well, you know, and it does make sense in the, you know, if you look at it, you know, a robot really has no other end than to break down and decay and be gone. You know, and
right.
Humans,
absolutely.
I guess, you know, unless you believe there is no God, there's no afterlife, and you're very much atheist and think this is it, you know,
yes.
they have the hope of moving on, past, you know, the body itself might decay, but the soul, you know, which,
yeah.
you know, what you have to focus on does, you know, have the ability to continue. And
you bet.
That they want to figure, you know, if that's what they're looking for, then yes, you try to figure out, okay, well, they're able to reproduce, you know, they pass on, you know, how to, you know, try to examine that. And it's very hard, I guess, clinically to examine that, you know, to just for some extent. So I can see that part of it, and it would be interesting to get, you know, more into this.
We shouldn't bother too much about people causing us crazy, because one man's crazy is another man's wise.
Exactly.
Dr. Biggeshuffle, but I'd like to make a point here.
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, well, as a crazy scientist, apparently,
No offense to that, but you know, it's, you know, of course, there's always going to be somebody out there saying someone else is wrong. I mean,
I'm quite proud of it too.
So there you go. Good.
But really, what it appears to be from Nigel's thesis, and one thing that really got me interested in all of this is when he started to say that the greys could actually manipulate us in some way. And that, I think, can be quite dangerous because, in fact, that's this genetic manipulation, which they seem to be able to do, and, in fact, even we can do now with ourselves, can actually influence us in various ways. And I was fascinated both by the sort of biochemical and cell biology mechanisms of how that might work, but also when Nigel sort of turned around and said, well, you know, the Shroud of Turin may in fact be a real object, and I certainly think it is, having looked at some of the evidence, that in fact this provides us with an actual pop out of this. Again, from a cell biologist point of view, I go, okay, well, you've got all of this radiant light, et cetera, and you've got this N light, which Nigel speaks about in his book. Well, how does that actually work through cells, and how have we been piggybacked upon? And this is the subject. I've just got interested in this, and in Nigel's next book, I'm going to be putting a thesis together to maybe try and explain some of that. So I think it's an absolutely fascinating thing. It's not all doom and gloom. This book is actually sort of presenting that there is possibly a way out of it for people.
And I know we actually spoke with twice now, Barry Schwartz, and he's a gentleman that went with the I can't remember the year, but in the 70s with the group that that did the research on the Shroud, and he shares, you know, with Andrew, you know, being a Jew looking at the Shroud. And being someone, you know, he is convinced that it's authentic, you know, that it, you know, it's not a painting. It's not down the line of what, you know, other people try to detract it to be, that it is, you know, evidence of something that happened that left that image, you know, and whatever that might be. You know, they've actually detected blood on the Shroud. I mean, it, you know, fascinating speaking with him about it. And then, you know, speaking with you gentlemen, you know, to have another perspective on why
taking it way out, you know, with being at what the aliens are looking for, you know, that's a whole new perspective,
and it adds a little more to what significance it might have.
Sure. The point is that you've got to look at things from a perspective that is not conventional. Conventionality has brought us to the point where our planet might be destroyed.
Yeah, that's a good
we
point.
Really have to look at things with a little bit more of a lateral view. And then something really interesting happens. You might actually get to the truth that way, you know.
Hmm. Yeah, and it's, you know, I agree with you on the conventionality thing. It's, you know, if we stick with the status quo of what we think is what, you know, yeah, we're probably we're so close to the end right now anyways, if going that way. So I know where you're coming from.
It's been very enjoyable talking to you guys, and I'm sure we've given your audience something to think about. And
my brain hurts.
They think of us as a bunch of crazies, but I tell you what, we're having a great time being crazy here.
There we go.
Well, you know, and I actually don't think you're crazy at all, so I want to make sure.
Nick's right there with you. I want to let you guys know that we do have your books, Nigel, linked up to our website, whispersradio.com.
Yeah, and your website itself is up there linked as well. But both books link. I have those linked up to the Amazon site anyone to purchase it. And I know for sure I'm going to be looking into them because it's an interesting perspective on this.
Thank you very much for your gracious license in hosting us. And let me say, let's hope we meet up sometime in the flesh too. Okay.
Oh yeah, if you're ever.
Anytime you're England, way, look me up. Okay.
I'll do that, and the same goes for if you're ever stateside. So.
Thanks very much. It's been wonderful talking to you guys.
You guys have a good
night. Have a good night.
Very much. Good night.
Bye. Well, Miss Quiet Lola, off in your I'm not talking for an hour mode. Let's hear what your brain's saying.
I have never quite heard that theory before about them being robots and things. But when he started talking about the Shroud, it makes it if you go with a theory that they're robots, And here was this incredible man that could, whether you believe him to be the son of God or not, mm-hmm. this incredible man that was capable of performing quote-unquote miracles. So, of course, they're going to be interested in what made him stand out in all of mankind.
Uh-huh.
And so then, yes, if you take it that he interpreted their visit as a visit from the devil with the temptation. And then, you know, to watch him go through what he went through and then burst into just a column of light is really what he was saying. It makes sense then that they would continue to pursue this all through the years, looking for something or someone who was equal to that, who can perhaps they can tap into to get this secret of what gave him truly immortality.
It gets really deep.
It does. And that's why I didn't say anything. I mean, I've never heard this theory before. So there was, I really didn't feel like I could ask an intelligent question. And I was just kind of really listening to everything that they had to say.
Yeah, I've heard of the biomechanical, but then he took it a little bit further, you know, past that. And that's what, you know, and that's when I wanted to know, because, you know, I'm looking at, you know, you know, I booked them and everything. Yeah, we got to go.
Yeah,
all right, we'll talk about it after the break.
Yeah, we'll talk.
You're listening to Whispers Radio on an AM 1600 WKKX, the Valley's Watchdog. We will be right back. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Whispers Radio here on AM 1600 WKKX, the Valley's Watchdog, and UPRN, the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. It is 710, 85 degrees here in downtown Wheeling. Give us a call, 304-214-1600. If you're out of the area, 1-866-514-1600. I'm Jordan Klein. He's Nick Queen. And she is the lovely Lola Miller.
I'm going to have Raleigh back on. Just,
my yeah, dear, my,
just to pump you back up a little bit.
My dear Lola.
My dear Lola.
Oh, I've traveled many galaxies.
I know. We got to get that as a
never
drop.
Never seen anything as lovely as you, my dear Lola.
Uh-huh. Yeah, except you wanted pictures. Oh, of course, honey, I'll do your sign. Just send me a photo. I'm thinking, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Send me some wink, wink pictures.
You should have sent one of John.
I'm Lola. John.
John in drag.
He would have wore a wig for that.
Oh, I'm sure he would have put pantyhose on,
him
too.
Up.
Sammy.
Yeah.
We could have got Sammy. He'd do it.
Uh-huh.
He'd probably come in right now with a wig if we want him to.
Yep.
So, Sammy, there's your challenge.
Speaking of a Sammy, we got Sam with us again.
Oh, wait. I didn't have her mic on because she doesn't say
the
hello.
One
Sam.
Time she says hello.
Hi.
She's a little radio shy, so we're not going to make
you'll
her talk.
Get over
so,
it.
Do you think Albert's listening? You want to say anything to Albert?
No, he's not listening.
Yeah, you got a point.
Thanks, Albert. Jeez.
All right. We were talking about the last hour.
Mm-hmm.
Nikki, you were saying your brain was numb.
It's a lot to take in because sure how, I mean, cause, you know, I'm trying to pull all this stuff together, you know, because I'm when I booked the guest. And this is actually someone that emailed me, you know, wanting to be on the show, you know, and this huge description of the books and the grays. And I'm like, okay, you know, I've had a bunch of UFO guests on. And then they send the thing about the Shroud of Turin. You know, with the other two guests, and I'm sitting there, I'm like, wait a second, let me go back. What did I read last time? And I was like, well, I've got to get them on now just to figure out how these are connecting together. Because on the surface, they don't connect together. I mean, you know, it's apples and oranges.
Yeah.
But now
yeah.
the way they described it,
it's different.
It makes sense in an odd sort of way.
I found really fascinating. Really,
mm-hmm.
I just had never even. Well, I had never heard the theory, but I'm not a big, you know, into UFOs or any of that kind of stuff. That's not necessarily, you know, what my big interest is. And so, you're talking about bio somethings or somethings, and I have never even heard of that.
Biomechanical entities,
I'm with you.
What, kind of like you look at the things, and it's not the same, but like the Japanese are trying to get, well, let's take it back to this then, biomechanical entities. Something that both of you can relate to, Battlestar Galactica. Those are those are the Cylons are biomechanical entities, and if you take it to what they're saying, you know, they almost are looking at the humans as it's almost I don't want to say it's the exact same thing.
Okay,
you
so
see,
his
Jordan's getting it. He's got a smile on his face.
So our buddy Nigel, which is a wonderful English name.
I love Nigel. go ahead.
That's not an original idea. Because old Battlestar Galactica did it.
Sorta.
And he stole it from them. That's what you're saying, Nick. I
got
He's had this idea way before that.
Well, and it doesn't matter. You know.
Exactly.
On Eureka, they have...
Sheriff Andy.
Yes. Okay,
I love Sheriff Andy.
I do, too. I love that show. I don't know that I like it the way it's going this season, but...
I like it a little. I like it. It's getting better, I think. Mm-hmm. I like that they finally they shake. I like that show because they shake things up.
Mm-hmm.
It's never the status quo of that show.
Yeah.
Except for the only status quo is it's going to get the town's almost destroyed after every episode.
Yes, and the sheriff is always out of his league and somehow manages to.
Yeah,
fix
and I like that. You know.
Yeah. No, I like the show. But it's just this season with them being in another time dimension.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird.
And they bring in. What's his name from Battlestar?
Who cares? It's awesome.
Yeah, the doctor, Baltar. He's on the show now. So, Baltar. But
I liked him better on Battlestar.
Yeah, I did too. But you know, it's kind of the same idea because they are looking at the humans as having something that they don't have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they only can reproduce through their the ship that you know.
Yeah,
they can only come back because of the resurrection ship, where you know, and they're looking at humans as they're able to pass on, you know, and have that quality of soul.
Well, and that explains a lot.
Yeah,
because all along I've always said if there is a race that is capable of traveling the distances that they would have to travel, and doing the things that they are capable of, what do they want with us? We're like lab rats, like we would look at a lab rat. So
we have Jesus.
So anyway,
you can cut his mic anytime.
I know. I just choose not to bother, but that gives them then a real purpose for coming, investigating, and sticking around. I mean, I can see him coming once and going, he's. Things are backwards as all get out, and well, I bother with them. They don't have any. Because really, what do we have to offer?
Well, yeah, you have to look for something exceptional to be able to.
Can't reproduce, our ability to reproduce, and then the ability to
resurrect or continue.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating, you know, and I'm wondering, you know. Because at the end of they were kind of, you know, laughing about, you know, the crazy question. And I think it is a valid question. You know, it is a very different theory than anybody else has presented.
So it's quantum physics at one point.
Exactly. So, you know, how do you defend yourself? And I think they kind of laughed it off a little bit. You know, and I think it's very pertinent. What if they are right? You know, everybody thinks they're right, of course, but... You know, I'll have to think about it some more.
Yeah, it's
gonna
really
be one of those
an interesting
things that keeps
theory.
Me up
it won't keep me up at night, but it's something to, you know.
I don't care
it really
that
is something
much.
To ponder. I mean, really, you know.
Because
I've always marveled over why would any being be that
interesting?
I mean, you know.
We aren't that interesting.
Well, we're not. We're not advanced by those standards. We're certainly not advanced.
Mm-hmm.
And then too, when you talk to people that have been abducted, it's never anybody extraordinary. It's not somebody that is perhaps a rocket scientist or some.
They're not abducting our leaders.
Yes.
Yeah.
I just have always kind of marveled at why.
And there's always has been kind of a religious aspect. Who, you know, and if you think about it, you know, going back, you know, they always talk about the, you know, abductions in the Bible, you know, at least UFOs in the Bible, and they always point to those, you know, well, you can take this as being a UFO and stuff like that. So, you know, if they have been around that long,
Well, the theory, the idea of beings from somewhere else has been around even long before the Bible.
Yeah. Well, and next week we're going to be talking with Jason Martell. He's our guest next week, and he's going to be talking about, and he's one of the more the people with the Samaria theories and Jordan's favorite. I don't know if he goes into Stargate, but you know, talking about the technology that, you know, maybe, you know, ancient astronaut kind of theory, you know, that they came and helped set, you know, Stardust, which is very different from what, you know, Nigel was talking about. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that they have been around since then.
Yeah.
And, you know.
And once again, to what end? If they came and did, in fact, they were the ancient astronauts. What are we, just like a lab experiment?
Mm-hmm.
Because if we are, I got a feeling they're sitting back and going, "Well, this one was a bust."
Yeah, but it's like, well, at least a failure is not going backwards. At least we know what to do better next time, kind of
thing. Yeah.
But it also, if you go to that theory, it takes away from, it's very opposite from what Nigel was talking about. Nigel's talking about that we had a definite beginning, and he doesn't mention a god or anything, because he's like,
no, it's a big band,
but
band theory.
You know,
yeah.
Something started us, whatever that is what gave us our quality, that, you know, that gives us a soul and all this. And if instead, you know, there's a alien group that comes and settles us and creates us, then at that point we're kind of the biomechanical entity to some degree. You know, we're engineered.
Yeah.
And it's a very opposite theory. So, you know, and it all can hurt your head really badly.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes, it can.